McLuhan, because he says advertisement is taking talented artists to make commercial art instead of creating real art.
Yeah, real art and critical art. And Sidney Finkelstein was assigned by the Communist Party to do a hit job on McLuhan. But he also, this is the, I don't know if he, maybe it's in one of our Roxy videos, but I found out reading this book by Greg Russell that Sidney Finkelstein wrote the liner notes for the Edgar Varese album, which featured Ionization on it, in the early 50s, and that was the first critical musical interpretation or analysis that Zappa read as like a 13-year-old, was Sidney Finkelstein, who 15 years before his book on McLuhan, which came up in 1968, here was Sidney already trapped within Dobbstown and didn't know it, that he would be writing for the important things that would show how wrong he and the Communist Party were. So that's a nice synchronicity. So what were we just saying about Sidney Finkelstein? Why did you bring him up? Because I was going to say another point.
Well, it's like...
Art and Commerce.
Adorno.
Let me say this.
LaRouche are saying
Adorno
mass
and LaRouche.
Culture is a way of controlling society and dumbing society down to better control them.
Through what?
And,
through commerce?
Through low culture and
Zappa, pop culture. Well,
in
look,
a way,
let
his
me...
activism was to educate the public and bring
yes.
in, for example, Varese to a rock audience.
That's right. And so McLuhan wrote about the division between art and commerce was not viable under electronic conditions. It was true under Gutenberg printing press conditions, but not under the new electronic implosion, because actually the content is not as important as the form, the radio form, the movie form, the TV form itself. It was more radical than any content. So content just became an obsolete whoever could pay the payola to get on there and have a hit song or be on a PBS, Mastery Piece Theater, whatever it's called, Mastery Theater Playhouse, and, you know, play some Shakespeare. They all were squashed up and minor art forms compared to art, if you define it as a teaching machine, the art environments, the media environments were the new teaching machines. So Joyce understood that, Wyndham Lewis understood it, McLuhan and then Zappa, and then Ion. And Ion is actually solving any disservices from that situation where the word makes the market. But so right there in the middle of the hippie world, you've got everybody celebrating Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and Zappa takes that cover and does a satire on the design of Sgt. Pepper, and the Beatles objected to it, at least Paul McCartney did. So it got delayed for a year, so it didn't come out until 6 months after the Haight-Ashbury Summer of Love fad. But when it came out, what was it called? We're Only in It for the Money. And so this is being said by a guy who was the least interested in money in the cliche way that is vulgar, that all the other bands were. They got their money.
He was completely...
Studying.
Yeah, he was completely immune to audience magnetism, Bob. So Zappa wasn't doing what he thought the audience or the listeners might want. He would go into the kitchen, cook something up, and just feed it to them, which wasn't how the popular culture was behaving at the time.
Well, he was not only feeding it, he'd make sure it attacked them. He wanted to be an outsider, a manipulative satirist. So, in We're Only for the Money,
When he says that, we're only here for the money, he's already showing, he's provoking these people like Adorno or LaRouche.
Yeah,
and,
Adorno
really
was a theatrician of culture for the Marxists.
He was really in the knowing of how the market works, distribution, and how things had to have concession and limited formats so that things cannot be so complex. You have to make very short pieces,
yes,
and the text has to be simple.
A lot of these great songs I play from that period, the R&B, they're like 2 minutes and 30 seconds long. They're so short, 2 minutes
yes,
and 30.
The songs only have three chords and only one type of tempo. And so he says, we're only here for the money, but then he's making very complex music. So he's really in the knowing of what's going on.
Right, and well, those bands, that every one of those bands that made it big. What?
It's a type of cultural activism to re-educate
that's
the public with more complex and with humor. And to erase this fragmentation in art.
Okay, let me before I forget add to that. In the late 60s, the Led Zeppelin, well, they didn't come until 69, but the Yardbirds, every famous band of the Eric Clapton and all these guys of that period, the late 60s, early 70s, most of them became drug addicts and didn't really keep their charisma going as constant as Zappa did. And they would start studying Aleister Crowley or get into Satanism. What, Carolyn?
Bert's here.
I noticed that. Yeah, we're going to get to you, Bert.
We'll get to you, Bert.
Yeah, thank you, Carolyn, for that notice. And so the thing was that here's Zappa. He's saying, don't take drugs. They'll ruin your gallbladder and kidneys. He did voice things. And this is when it was very uncool to be anti-drugs, I mean, at least among the baby boomer generation. So he is taking his money and funneling it in to do orchestral compositions for big orchestras. He was immediately plowing his money back into his own creativity, which he couldn't stop. Couldn't stop thinking up new music. He said he went on vacation one time back then, and he holed up in a hotel. His wife was trying to get him to relax, and he made about three compositions. It just kept coming through him. So it was kind of like a channeling. The other thing is that Ralph Gleason was the famous pop culture critic in San Francisco, and he was the authority on great jazz and serious music within as a newspaper critic. He wasn't an academic. When he first saw Zappa and the Mothers, he said, these are a bunch of advertising executives trying to infiltrate pop culture, the youth market, to rip everybody off. That's how the perception... The average perceptions couldn't see the present. They couldn't see what Zappa was. He thought they were a bunch of advertising executives pretending to be hippies and were disgusting and made terrible music. Ralph Gleason died within a year or so after saying that, so I'm pretty sure non-physical nailed him for getting Zappa all wrong. And and that guy... Ralph Gleason became the big advisor and mentor to Jan Wenner of Rolling Stone. So no wonder Jan Wenner never got it right eventually. I mean, he had the wrong mentor, Ralph Gleason. So these are stories that only I know at this late stage. Nobody knows this stuff. So I'm going to unmute Bert, and then we'll get back to Roxy's dissertation. Okay,
well,
so
yes, I would like to say that Zappa starts saying on her Freak Out album, we're only here for the moment, for the money, but every time he will reinvest a lot of money in rehearsing, in buying new equipment, in hiring the best musicians, in after hiring orchestras, and then also promoting the work of people. And he wanted to go on promoting and recording people that he was not appreciated, and he knew the music was really interesting, and he's also
he promoted
the only
other people.
Rock artist that when he says, how did you become a rock star or interested in music? He says he heard a piece by Edgar Varese called Ionization. So that's really like there we have.
Yes, he heard Bob.
The connection.
I'm sure. I'm sure me and Ofenau were having, we knew him back then. See, that's the interesting thing. Little I know that Ofenau would sneak out of me and creep over to Zappa's home in Lancaster and mind control him while I was just hanging at the local hotel on business. So, there could have been, just like Ian says, Ofenau and me influenced Dylan in the mid-70s when he met Patti Smith at CBGB. So, but back to your saying, Zappa, he, you know, Arthur Kroeger said the fad in the 60s was pop sociology. McLuhan was seen as a sociologist describing what was going on. Everybody wanted to know what was happening in society, which we would call, you know, what's your sociological view of what's happening. So pop sociology was the trend. So Zappa was in that. His albums were designed to show what was happening. Lita Eliscu, a very bright woman who wrote for Walter Bower, Cecil, each other, when Uncle Meat came out, or yeah, around that time, she said, this is the State of the Union address from Frank Zappa. She understood that Frank was trying to sum up the culture. And so sociology is what Frank and McLuhan appear to be doing at that time, expressing the, sort of trying to show a hidden ground, different points, but the sociological part of Frank is important at that time. And he also was a musicologist, and he would sabotage the seriousness of sociology by recording a mental patient like Wildman Fisher. Right? That was considered sick that Zappa did that. He was exploiting this ridiculous street musician who, you know, she tried to kill his mother and then be hospitalized on the Sunset Strip area every now and then. Why would Zappa record him? There was a legitimate criticism of exploitation, but I'm sure he had other reasons. He also promoted the groupie phenomenon and recorded these semi-musical groupies known as GTOs. He really was... they used to say that McLuhan was a sociologist of extreme phenomena. Baudrillard, continuing McLuhan's method, said that he analyzed extreme phenomena. He even put it in his subtitles. But Zappa, I guess, could be lumped into someone studying extreme phenomena, fringe behavior. But the fringe behavior was always an indication of what was happening. You know, if you want to know what's going on in the culture, look for the mutants. Look for the sort of popular street-level artists and what they're trying to say. They're like slang. Slang is an indication of change. So gestural, behavioral performances are a kind of slang. So Frank was aware of that, too. Always saying, you know, fighting simple censorship because he would have swear words on his thing. But he also was highlighting sociological censorship and pointing out the slang of weird phenomena that expressed something. Like groupies were considered.
Well, he started that with that ionization album, Bob, by playing it to people to see their reaction to it.
Right.
And that continued to be a theme right through. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I sent you a video with the concert Zappa organized for in honor of Edgar Varese, and I think it would be interesting just to listen the beginning. They start with Ionization, and Zappa presents the piece.
Okay, but just what Michael was saying, what was that thought, Michael? You just said,
he used to play that Ionization. Provoke them.
Yeah.
You see what impact.
Yeah, and if you listen to the Zappa that comes through Ion around September 2nd, 2009, when I'm got Ben Watson, who did a famous biography of Zappa, is on there, and he wants to talk to Zappa. The Zappa that comes through emphasizes that he was always trying to be in effect to be unpopular, to bug people. And when his albums became successful, it really pissed him off because he was losing the way to probe people and to do what he did with the Varese record in high school. So, he was always presenting the record, the Ionization record with his bands and making them be different. He got really bad in the early 80s. You've listened to the album Man for Utopia. Some of the songs are damn bad, really stupid. We can maybe play a sample sometime to show you. you're saying that, Michael, he's probing people using art. McLuhan said pop art is taking anything in your environment. The Warhol pop art, take anything in your environment and claim it's significant or art. So Zappa was taking that pop art motive and doing it more expertly, studying the effects on people. Yeah, I guess that's all. So can I play the German things, or do you want me to play the Berez
well,
first?
I think we should start with Berez, because that's
okay.
How he gets turned on into composing.
That's right. That's
and
how he
it's interesting how he talks about how he presents
right.
his
so,
favorite composer.
Right.
I think it's very touching that he organizes a concert in honor of his idol.
With Verez's widow. With Mrs.
Yeah.
Verez. And, Verez had a home down in Washington Square in the Village, New York City's Greenwich Village area. And, he got so pissed off at the music industry, he stopped making music for 25 years. I guess that's like 40s, 50s, and early 60s. And, he lived in the Village, but he was a teacher to a lot of the upcoming avant-garde artists of the baby boomer generation. For example, Carol Lee Schneeman, who I met at the BAMP scene in December 97 at the conference Severo Latrinji put on. She was a secretary of Edgar Verez in the Village. She became the first female performance radical artist kind of thing. Look her up. S-C-H-N-E-E-M-A-N. Carol, I think it's C-A-R-O-L-E. Carol Schneeman. There was a church nearby where Verez lived called the Judson Memorial Church, where all the happenings in avant-garde New York scene of the early mid-60s happened. The minister there, I guess, was pretty hip, so he let everybody use his church. So, so I know that Zappa, when he got to talk about Verez, in my memory, he said, the journalists were there to hear Zappa talk about Verez, and I think this is before the concert that you're talking about, which is around 1983, but this is back in the 70s or something. Zappa, he castigated the journalists, says, "You people suppressed this guy for 25 years. You had no clue that this was the greatest art of our time, the greatest music, and you guys drove him out of the industry." He really scolded the press, you know, about Verez. So maybe we're going to hear that in what Roxy has sent me. Him doing that. So we have Bert's universal giggle, the universal gesture of greeting, Bert's giggle. Bert, do you have anything to say before, have you heard everything or just came in late?
No, I heard everything. You know, it's funny, last week I didn't know that you were going to do Zappa, but
Zappa.
I listened to a lot of Zappa last week. I listened to all the concerts, and it's really refreshing. I mean, it's, when I was listening to it, it just, captivated me. It's almost like it's watching television, but you're listening, because he was so entertaining, the music, the concerts, and how he tuned the audience. And there was one funny thing that made me laugh when I was on public transportation is that he was cutting on the audience. He said, "You are the worst audience I've ever been exposed to."
Was that the Norwegian audience or somebody like that?
Yes. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
It was somewhere foreign. It wasn't the United States, but it was just so
That's
funny.
Right.
I mean, like, where have you ever heard an entertainer get in front of? You're the worst audience I have ever been in front of.
You're dead. You shedded eight people are dead. What's wrong with you? Yeah. That's pretty good,
yeah.
Eh? Who?
Yeah.
Did your band ever do that, Roxy, when you were in the nightclub? Say, "You're the worst dancers I've ever seen in a nightclub." Did you ever do that, Roxy? No, you don't do that. In Mexico, you get killed. But it's pretty amazing what he would say to people. And he would argue with people. Go ahead.
Yes, in this Verez concert, he's in one of the intermissions, because they have to change the furniture, like he says, instruments had to be moved around and changed and all this.
Yeah.
There's a rock audience, and some people are being rude and shouting, and Zappa says, yeah, you are very rude, and he says, but that's good. These you rude people
says,
have to
good?
Listen to this.
Yes.
And he was like, you can be rude when I'm standing here, but then when they start playing, just shut up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what he was always
there,
very
like,
sensitive.
Yeah, yeah. Take everything out. Take everything. You can say it when I'm here, but if you do that when they're playing, I'm really pissed off.
Right. He was very sensitive to any little disturbance in the audience. You'll hear him in many bootlegs. Some little guy way back in the 30s row goes, "Whoa!" And he'll stop the music and go, "What'd you say?" And the guy would go, "Ah!" And he'd say something like, "Sorry, you'll hurt your throat. Calm down."
But
in a way,
in that concert, you can see he's like you, like Ion says, you won't stop until everybody gets it.
Yeah,
he's really
trying that's right.
To tell the people why he considers this composer so important, what is the importance of this, telling them, yeah, he had to stop for 25 years and we're going to play 5 of his 10 compositions. So shut up.
Yeah, I've occasionally been known to do that on payday, right? When you guys get carried out, shut up, you fucking idiots. Remember when Ian started to play the sound from the cold fusion?
For your education.
Machine? Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It, August 30th.
Keep that from you, and I'm bringing it to you.
August 30th, 2014. You look it up in the archives. Ian starts playing the sound, and you guys are just babbling away. And I say, "You fucking idiots! You're hearing the most incredible technology." But oh no, you guys are getting both out of your fucking opinions. You don't even know what's going on. So shut up and listen. So yes,
he did that also to prove that the industry says people is sort of stupid and they need to get low culture because they don't get high culture, and
right.
He was saying no. They just don't have access to that. If they had the choice, they would choose better things. So he was trying to make a point really by organizing these type of things. And then he wanted to record many contemporary musicians right because he
right.
thought
you know,
many composers were not being played right,
right.
by
so,
the traditional classical musicians.
Yeah, they weren't playing, even doing the classics correctly, which is, McLuhan had the same criticism for Shakespeare theater, that people didn't know how to do Shakespeare the way it was done in the 1600s or 1500s. 19th century literacy fucked it up.
Let's play the Barrés. I think it's important to listen to,
right.
to this musical.
I was going to add something there, just before we play it. You were sort of, she's shouting at, in 1970 Alyssa says she didn't know Zappa was a composer. All the early albums, which you don't get to see unless you get a CD, and they're probably on the CD, but this quote may not be on the CDs. But Alyssa, the major quote, the only quote on every early album was from Edgar Varese, "The present day composer refuses to die." So there was Zappa saying, "I'm a fucking composer, and I refuse to die, and I'm here to do whatever composers thought they were doing." McLuhan would say, "Be in any environment, and you're not going to stop me, and I'm going to figure out how to get through to you people."
That's so poignant because I was just going to bring up the provoking that Ben talked about in a few different ways so far. That shows that he was really present, you know, that he was trying to provoke his audience, trying to provoke the listeners, joking with his band. It's similar to what you do, Bob, on payday. It's about being able to surf whatever provoking comes into my reality. Yeah. I can surf it in that moment and I can play with it or I can harmonize with it. That is part of the taking the power and enjoying the poise that you get from just relaxing and not being
programming
so worried about everything. Yeah.
Yeah, McLuhan called
so
it programming
the anti-environment. The anti-environment point in the and being provocative and provoking, playing the record and seeing what people would react, that's kind of like awake, just be awake, like wake up in your life, check out what, like you say, Bob, instead of just being in the headphones all the time, observe your environment. That's provoking yourself to paying attention. So that's another way that Zappa was, sort of a John the Baptist for Iandam, because this constant provoking himself and others in different ways is really fun and relevant to notice.
Yes. And he, just
but that describes you completely. That also describes you completely, Bob, the present-day composer who refuses to die.
Yeah, literally, I ain't fucking died.
Yeah.
Eat this stuff and you can be like me. You won't have to die. But the this teacher role.
You don't have to be at the Père Lachaise.
Yes, that's right. I was there to wipe out that cemetery. And,
said that.
And you guys probably
know. You will never be there.
Yeah, so Roxy got, we put it up, you know, last week, or she put it up, and within a day or so, she got a email from Vimeo. They selected it as one of the best of the day. Selected by the
staff. Really?
It got extra attention. Me walking around.
It's not corrected, but it got like 200 views.
Great video.
But it's not the final one.
Really? Would you say it had 200 views, Roxy?
Yes.
But well, that's tremendous.
That
we usually get 3 views. Bert, Alyssa, and Michael. And Carolyn. We don't even get 11 listeners. So Ion ripped me off, and he tries to provoke people, so he tells them to look up words in Google, which is an updating of Zappa on his first album, telling people to drop out and go to the library. Get yourself an education.
That's so good.
Yeah
that's what just, he put wiki, on the... just wiki it. Just go to the library.
Yeah. So in the old days, you had to go to the library. So in 1970, after he broke up the Mother's Invention, I always kept track of the pop culture, looking at Hit Parader and the youth magazines to see any articles on Zappa, and I would find them and collect them. There was one in early 1970, and I'm saying, Jesus, he's in a classroom. He's in a high school or something. And that's the vibe. You can't fully tell what it is, but I found out later, occasionally going to local high schools and educating them. This was when he didn't have his band, because he had broken them up. This is late 69, early 70. He continued teaching. Going to high school and lecturing people.
Wow.
Which is almost his whole agenda. So then years later, when I discussed Zappa running for president with the Evergreens said it'd be very hard for Zappa to make president because it's a Big Brother controlled, seriously controlled operation. But they said Zappa would make a tremendous local congressman, assemblyman, city hall guy, and probably get to the level of being mayor, but he'd be really good at that level. So there's Frank with his civics responsibility. He said the only course he ever had an interest in high school was civics, and he did well in civics, but so he kept doing his civics education. So he was an old-fashioned responsible citizen in the old-fashioned way on top of his patina of creativity. That was like McLuhan teaching, regular English courses during the day, but on the weekend he'd tear it up and become a manipulative satirist and freak everybody out. That's what Frank would do. He'd take a break.
Yeah.
So.
Let's listen to Barrett. Just the start of the concert. Not the whole piece.
That's one thing I've learned about Roxy. She is a teacher, a high school teacher, a college teacher. She's didactic. Yeah, so we went through it.
No, because I think it's really important to listen to Frank presenting Barrett at Ionization.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to click on the YouTube link. And then make sure Soundflower is on. Okay, that's there. Soundflower. Output. Soundflower. Then the volume is up. This should work. It says, Frank Zappa, a musical tribute to Edgar Varese with 9,184 views. And this would be 30 years later. But YouTube's only been going for 10 years. So, but this happened in the early 80s. I got it right.
Oh, my God.
This music before, I'll give you a little bit of information.
Okay. Since we're laughing, I'm going to replay it a little bit, so we might have missed up. Now, this is April 17, 1981. And it's in the Palladium, which Carol and I were in a few months
Palladio.
Before. Yeah, Palladios, right. And it's called fusion, isn't Palladium? Isn't that the name of the mineral? Or the element? Palladium?
Palladium is an element, yes.
Yes. It's a key factor in Coldplay. So we were in the Palladium on November 1980, and Zappa did 3 concerts. So we were in New York for that, and then this is happening 6 months later in that building. A lot of rock stuff took place in the Palladium in that period. So I'm just going to rewind it just so we don't miss any of the words from our laughter. Okay.
Shut the fuck up. Hey, now look. For those of you who have never heard this music before, I'll give you a little bit of information about each piece while they change the stage over, because it's a different instrumentation for each piece. So I'll be back periodically to keep you informed of what's going on. This is a basic introduction to the music of Edgar Varese for people who don't know anything about it. You dig it? That's good. A man of good taste. I know there are some people here who already know what's going on and like this music and appreciate it. That's right, Ionizations is going to be the first piece.
Yay.
What? No, we're not having a dance contest tonight, so. Wish we could, but no, it's not going to happen. Now look. That's right. Come on, get it over with now, because if you make that noise when they play, I'll be really mad at you. All right. Quiet. Ionizations, and it was first performed in 1933, and he started working on it in 1931, and when it was played, that's my name, shut up, and when it was played,
this is really good, this is good, I've never heard this, Roxy, it's a good find, I mean, he's telling me, he's
now
like,
that you stop, I would like to say something. He's bringing contemporary serious music to a rock audience, and then he does the opposite when he works with Ensemble Modern. He brings popular carnival music to these high educated, high brow.
Yes, he's a mini anti environment in the room. He's a mini anti environment to whatever's there.
That's so good.
Yeah. And now he's telling these people who keep yelling out, Zappa! He's dealing with the electronic effect, and he's trying to retrieve an update of visual culture. He says, look, you know, I'll be really mad if you make any noises during this thing. I mean,
That was one of the big criticism of Adorno. He said people who listen to low culture music don't even listen.
Right.
You know,
right.
Intellectuals analyze and really concentrate and pay attention. But Zappa is trying to educate that folk, the people, like Bob.
Yes, we've come here. Now, the Adorno, he says, okay, the pop culture, they don't listen to their electronic music, to the electric rock and roll and all that. But McLuhan comes on and says, that we don't, you can't have a literate mental response to rock.
Right.
He said, it's like foam rubber that presses up against you. And Zappa called it bone conduction, you know? Adorno didn't recognize this is not literate culture, and you don't put down people for not responding in a literate way. It's a tactile kinetic thing that you see McLuhan in a nightclub, and he's they got the Go-Go Girls in the background, and he's talking over. This is a pretty popular YouTube video, and he's saying this is like a foam rubber. It presses up against you. It doesn't happen through your ears. It happens against your chest and torso is how you receive this music. And then he finishes.
Amplify.
Yes. Which is a line in Finney's Wake that he blurred with his own writing, so you didn't know whether he was saying it or Joyce said it. That's in Explorations of around number 5 in mid-50s. So in this video, he stops talking. He's explained it, and the Go-Go Girls are going on, and he says to the cameraman, are they going to turn this down? I've had enough of this shit, you know? I don't want to hear the foam rubber anymore. He asked him to turn it off. Have you seen that, Alyssa?
I haven't yet.
Yeah. Okay, so Roxy, you're pointing out that Zappa is being in not visual culture, but he's saying, hey, we're in a different modality here, and you need to become flexible in different cultural modalities, know how to experience what's happening here in this context, not just be a knee-jerk, simple person, rhythm addict.
He did that to the to the audience and to the musicians he was working with, like I compare it to you, because you also make us look into everything, and we are not communists or monarchists or whatever, to La Rouge and into this and into this. We can look into everything. We don't create conspiracy, and we have fun. And I was telling you, I don't care if people think we're freaks, because, like Zappa said, to progress there has to be these
mutations.
Freaks.
We are freaks. We are. We are freaks.
And
the
inception
of the norm is what makes things progress, and if they don't get it, that's their problem. I don't care.
Right. I got the ultimate compliment,
like
Roxy. The ultimate compliment was the guy, we're reading from his text, Greg Russo. He was all enthusiastic about coming on the show, and then somebody got to him, the CIA. Says, you cannot go on Bob's show. The Zappa world must not know about Bob. If you go on there, people know you and your book, and then they'll find out about Bob. That cannot be done. So he dropped out. And he never even answered me to tell me that he was dropping out. So I just said, okay, if you don't respond to this email, I know that you've chickened out. I insult him. I call him a chicken.
Yes, wow. And Paredes himself was so attacked that he stopped composing for 25 years. And he, in an interview, he says, all innovators were like the punks of their time. Now we look back, and for us, they're the classicals, the people
now religion. They're now religious icons, these punks.
They had the same, had to fight the same.
Same problem.
Yeah.
The same anger of the audience.
Working on Facebook groups, and people will just chicken out and care about the reputation. We don't care about the
reputation. Yeah, those people are only in for the money. So here's this guy celebrating Zappa, And he doesn't even recognize the Zappa tradition continues in a new form right here. And he will not participate, just like the stupid McLuhanites. The art must change. The art has to come into as a new form because the media environment changes. That's the best explanation. So Manipian satire always adopts a different form.
And that is one of the definitions of art. Because when we discuss what is art, what is high culture, what is low culture, at the end, what transcends is art, what goes beyond the trend, the fashion of the time, the marketing of the time. And
the hypnosis of the time.
That's why they make a festival of American music, and they play film music, Zappa, Gershwin, and also John Cage and Philip Glass and all others. But Zappa is now recognized as an important contemporary American composer.
Yeah, yeah. He got his goal. The so the people in 1913, they hear Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and they riot. Why do people riot at a nice musical presentation? Well, because the people are conditioned by the technological milieu of their late 19th century, they need art that provides some kind of a relief from the pressures of their environment. So usually it's older, familiar forms. So the movies and telephone comes in, changes the world, the people aren't aware of it. So then a guy writes music in tuned rhythms of the new electric spaces, and he makes a new art, a new kind of sound, and it rubs the people wrong. The people can't stop. They say, this is not a proper soothing environment. And then they riot and get pissed off at what Stravinsky did. But then because they're going to be changed by the movie, radio, and telephone over the next 30, 40 years, and they're going to become a different kind of people, then they start liking Stravinsky 40 years later, while a new technology, television, comes in and starts changing even that dynamic. So a guy like Zappa shows up to play the present effects, and he's considered ugly. And, of course, he knew that, and he said, we are ugly. He used to celebrate it. He says, you beautiful people, you fashionable people, you Jane Fondas, Catherine Deneuve, you better watch out because there's more of us than you. There's more ugly people.
That's so good.
Yeah, so there it is again. The nobody really nobody knows what art's for. Then McLuhan came along, could see enough of the changes that he could explain it. He explained it, so then they tried to put him in jail for explaining where art comes from, and that meant all the Gutenberg arts were obsolete because they could be explained. Now the new effects from the global theater, nobody understood that was the new art. And so what did Zappa call himself? He called himself Intercontinental Absurdities, United Mutations. A lot of his terms fit with the intuition of the global theater. Intercontinental Absurdities was another, or did I already say that? But it's interesting the language Zappa would use. So you have this TV show, Welcome Back, Cotter, which probably started about 1970, the young disco guy, John the Rebel. What was that guy called?
John the Rebel later.
What?
Oh, nice.
John the Rebel later.
Oh, yeah, Rebel later. John, Pulp Fiction.
I like
Who's that
Roxy.
Guy? Pulp Fiction. John, the famous 80s actor.
The actor?
Travolta. Yeah, John Travolta. Yeah. So he's in Welcome Back, Cotter as a kid actor, and this is a hip high school teacher or something. So this is what it was for me. Because I could see the present, or knew of it, I'd see this TV show, wouldn't watch it too much, but I'd see it, and I'd think of Zappa being in the classroom. I said, look at that. The people are given the rearview mirror. They should have a show on Zappa being the high school teacher. So I would always see. No one would look at John Travolta or Welcome Back, Cotter and think of Zappa. I was living in the present. I would think of Zappa. I said, Zappa could do this better. You know? I'm just showing you how once you live in the present, you're responding to things with different imagery. I can say that surely there's not one person in the world who looked at Welcome Back, Kotter, the TV, popular TV show, and said, no, no, Zappa was better as a high school teacher than these guys.
Yeah, that's like people looking at the political environment today and not being able to really see it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And did you, well, let me just add this point before the next point. But because I looked in, I tell you, I'm 45 or something years old, and I'm looking at Hit Parader magazine, teen magazines. I assure you, anybody else of my generation was not looking at teen magazines, but I was looking. But I was on the lookout for when Zappa would infiltrate and show up, and there was that picture of him teaching in high school. And that's what primed me to have that image in response to Welcome Back, Kotter. Then the second point is that Donald Trump, President Trump, is bringing in legislation to diminish the bullshit of vaccination. That's one of the most incredible things if he does that, if he pulls that off. That's the biggest service you could do for American society as a president, to actually get control of the vitamin, the vaccination disease plague, and give people at least a choice about it. That's pretty amazing. And that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
So you look at my Facebook page, you'll see Tim Boland, a very good activist, a friend of Carolyn. He writes the thing, and he's part of making the legislation. And he has in the headline, shriek, shriek, shriek. All the liberals are outraged at whatever Trump does. And they so merge with the regular medicine, with the science icon, idol worship, the idol worship of science, they don't even understand what it needs to be done in vaccination. They think, this is horrible, Trump is anti-science, we need more vaccinations. So, that's a side point there. Go ahead.
Yes, but at the same time, there is a new status matter, the time crystals, and all physics don't apply anymore. So that's the thing with science.
That's
like,
right. It's always,
and that's exactly what Ion is saying. It's no longer effective.
Applicable,
yeah.
Yeah, like I could say my
chart. Let's go back to Zappa and ionization.
Right. Now, send me that video. I can't find the one that you apparently sent me on the crystals. If you can find
Bob,
send it to me.
Bob, keep playing the other. Are you going to keep playing?
Yeah,
the
yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that.
Okay,
but yeah, shut up. I'm teaching you shit.
Zappa.
Yeah, they say more name. Zappa. I'm saying stuff way better than Zappa. Okay, come on. Let's
That's
calm
my
down
name.
Here.
That's my name.
But the, what
was
name, it, that we were, yeah, what were we just saying, about,
science.
Oh yeah, crystals. That's the subtitle of my tiny note chart. The spinning clothing crystals have danced the hex advertisement. The word crystals right in there. So
yeah.
I'm sure that's what they're picking
up
on.
That.
and it's really like that because, these new state of matter are crystals, but they're like gelatin. They don't stop moving. And those are the diamond crystals, really.
That's right. Very good. Okay, so let's continue. Hope it's loud enough.
Poorly. They thought that this piece was horrible.
I'm going to rewind slightly, just so we don't miss anything.
1933, and he started working on it in 1931. And when it was played, that's my name, shut up. And when it was played, critics reviewed this piece very poorly. They thought that this piece was horrible because, what else? Everything else. This piece is written. I think 32.
Well, that's awesome. We got to stop this.
And
he is not amused.
No, but he's funny, though. They go, what else? And he goes, everything else. He's fitting at ease. He's including everything. Did you get that? They yelled out something.
Yeah.
He goes, they go, what else? And he goes, everything else. And,
yeah,
okay, 1933 is an ionizing date, because that's when the Chinese saved the American economy by buying up a lot of gold or something. I get mixed up with the Federal Reserve bonds. Whatever they did, Ion cites that as the beginning of the Chinese takeover. That's in 1933. That's when the mountain comes in, the good guys.
Wow.
And that's the guys who promote Ion. So ionization technically was indicating the political move behind
Damn.
The scenes in the on the second economy. And did you say, Zappa says, they did a lousy performance because they didn't know what they were fucking playing for. Did you ever say that? The guys in 33 were so fucked up they didn't understand Perez that they did a lousy performance.
No, but,
he talked about the invisible garment. Yeah.
That's true. And, well, that was one of his, I think, in his agenda to perform some contemporary composers right.
That's right. He wanted to show how it should have been done. So somebody yells out, Zappa! And he goes, yeah, that's right. That's my name. Shut up! It's quite funny. Okay, I'm going to go back and do that again. Did you want to say something else, Roxy?
No, let's listen to this.
Okay.
He's like a middle school teacher, Bob. He's being like a middle school teacher. Yeah.
He's in the ghetto. He's in the ghetto with the local juvenile delinquents that he's trying to... But it's backward. They actually love him. They're not against him. They love him, but they're loving the wrong guy. This is a different Frank Zappa that's now happening. You know, the other electronic yokels, McClune called them, they don't understand that this is a different Zappa. They think that... Can you imagine the whatever classical music audience... was there what they were thinking of these animals yelling out, Zappa! You know, you never see that in a Leonard Bernstein concert. You know, Bernstein! If I ever go to a classical concert...
And then the presenter just say, shut up!
It's like a riot. If I ever go to the Maui Cultural Center, they play some classical music. Whoever the conductor is, it might be able to be some Japanese guy, Mr. Huakawa. I'm going to yell, Huakawa! I'm going to start yelling out the guy's name. And I'll be immediately kicked out. And I won't have to listen to it. Okay.
1933, and he started working on it in 1931. And when it was played, that's my name, shut up. And when it was played... Critics reviewed this piece very poorly. They thought that this piece was horrible because, what else? Everything else. This piece is written in percussion, 32 different percussion instruments. And, you are going to get a chance to hear some sounds that you don't often get to hear anyplace. During his lifetime, he only wrote 10 pieces that are published and remain. There's one that we don't know where it went, and another one that's unfinished. But all that survives... Huh? By what? Oh, let me finish what I'm trying to tell you. Look, if he has 10 pieces that he wrote in his whole life and lived to be around 86 years old, tonight we're playing about half of everything that this man wrote during his lifetime. And this is a special concert, and please don't misbehave and enjoy it. Right. I'd like to introduce you now to Joel Tone and the orchestra of our time with our first rocking teenage number, Ionizations by Edgar Perez.
Now they're quiet, eh?